Thank you for joining IAB There. And now your host, David Cohen. Over to you, David.
All right. Hello, everyone. Today is Tuesday, August 4th, 2020. And we have Tropical Storm Isaias howling outside. So hopefully we will continue to have all of our electricity and we will be able to get through this show today. That's the idea. Anyway, I'm David Cohen. I'm the president of the IAB. And IAB There, for those of you who have not tuned in before, is our daily live stream in which we connect the digital advertising ecosystem. The topic that we have for today is programmatic advertising in 2020 and beyond, with a good friend and special guest, Luke Stillman, who is the SVP of Global Intelligence at Magna Global. Luke, why don't you join me in the stream and let's start our conversation. It is great to see you, sir. How are you?
I am great. I'm glad you had to pronounce the storm and not me, David. But
Yes. I've seen many people muff that up on the on air on the news, so I've gotten quite accustomed to Isaias. It's a tongue twister. So let's fill everyone in on our kind of relationship. We worked together at Magna for many years. I don't even know how many years, but we've worked together quite closely, and it's great to see you again. We haven't really connected in some time, certainly since this COVID pandemic has hit us. So thank you for joining, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. For those folks who are unenlightened and are not aware of Magna and what Magna does, give a quick kind of elevator pitch, if you will, of what Magna is and what your role is at Magna, if you don't mind.
Sure. So Magna is, it's an internal unit within IPG Media Brands, where we use our insights, our forecasts, and our relationships to provide clients with a competitive marketplace advantage. I'm on the intelligence team, so we offer reports and custom intelligence about all aspects of the advertising economy. That's consumption at one end, the way consumers are interacting with media, all the way to dollars at the other end, ad revenues, ad costs, new ad tech, and more. And our goal is to be able to say where the marketplace is today and where it's going to be in 5 years. And the last few months have been scary and unpredictable and strange, but we think and hope that this is the time when we can be the most useful.
So I have to imagine predicting out 5 years under normal circumstances would likely be challenging. Predicting out 5 years given uncertainty over the next 5 months is certainly that as well. And we'll come back to that as we get into our chat. Before we dive into that, let's just talk about what it's like to, we were talking about this a little bit before we went on air. What's it like to be working remotely? We're now kind of several months in. You know, we at Magna had a very kind of close-knit group. We were very kind of connected, meeting every day. What's it like? How do you maintain connectivity with the team under these kind of unusual circumstances?
I mean, it is, I think we're all acclimating a little bit. It's certainly strange. As we were just saying before we started, we're all going to be Zoom experts by the time this is done. I think one thing that was a little lucky for us at Magna is that on the intelligence team, we're leveraging researchers and planners and strategists in 70 different markets. So I have conversations on the phone and on email with them all day. But in some ways, we were already, a lot of our day was already remote because I haven't had that constant face-to-face interaction with them. So I think that helped ease the transition somewhat. But in general, you know, I think just trying to keep things not 100% work all the time and discuss regular life, whether that's happy hour hangouts or anything else, just to remember that the person on the other end of that video chat is a real person and we're not just all isolated in our respective bubbles all the time.
Yeah, that's a good thing to remind ourselves of. You know, the global purview is an interesting one because, you know, we are in a global pandemic. So this is affecting parts of the world in different stages and phases. I mean, we're in different stages and phases here in the U.S. alone, let alone on the global stage. With your global purview, you know, you could potentially see the future. There have been other countries that have kind of are further along down the path than the U.S. Is. What do we have to look forward to? Do you have a sense of what the next couple of months will look like in any dimension you'd like, either in health crisis, media usage, consumer habits, whichever dimension you'd like to take it on?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When the quarantines first began, we immediately zeroed in on those Asia Pacific markets where in March and April, when everything was just getting crazy in the US, they were starting in some cases to go back to their new normal. So I think what we saw when we looked at those markets was huge spikes in media consumption. Linear TV up 50% in China and in some other markets, Italy, 40% in India and Spain, 30% in the UK. And over time, as we watch those markets that are maybe a little ahead of the US in the COVID progression, we've seen those viewing trends normalizing. And actually in Canada, the UK, and the US, it's back to shrinking year over year. And that contrasts with the streaming viewing, which was up 100% or more in many markets and has been much stickier. So those have normalized a little bit, but they remain at a significantly raised trajectory than they were from pre-coronavirus. And we think that that is one change that we're going to see globally in every market and that will be a permanent change for the consumer. The other thing we're really focusing on is the economies in each of these markets, because a key foundation of the Magna research is connecting ad spend with economic performance. And what we've seen in markets like China or like Korea that are pretty close to back to normal life is that you get this huge recovery spike in economic performance, but it doesn't get you all the way back to the pre-COVID normal. And that last 5 or 10 or 15% of economic activity has been really slow to return. So now we're looking at even the most optimistic economic forecasts say this recovery will take all of next year and in some markets into 2022 or beyond.
Wow. Wow. That's sobering. Certainly when you think about it, is there a country that you've seen kind of play through the kind of different phases of this pandemic that you think we are closely approximating, or is that a tough one since we're kind of an amalgam in the U.S. As well, kind of different states and different states of progression? Who are we looking most like?
I think for a long time we were saying we're looking most like the U.K., but maybe over the last month or 6 weeks, the expectations for those two markets have diverged a little bit. So I think now we're saying, well, the U.S. and Latin America will be very similar in how coronavirus plays out, how that weighs on economic activity, and therefore how that feeds through to advertising spending. Now, of course, there are quirks in every market. We get a benefit from political spend this year, but I think now that we're starting to have the risk of, do we need more shutdowns, that it's a little harder to equate our market to one of the markets that was maybe a few months further along.
Yep. Yeah. So let's just talk about kind of usership habits or consumer habits. We talked about streaming, which I think is one that we've talked about a good bit. And we are seeing that, you know, the amount of streaming advancement in terms of usage over a fairly concentrated period of time, it's been a decade of growth in maybe 4 or 5 months is kind of the analogy that I've heard. So streaming is up. What is down precipitously in the U.S. in terms of usage?
Well, if you look at just when we look at trends of consumer behavior, just the physical limitations that the coronavirus has put onto all of us alone have huge impacts on the advertising economy. So
out of home, if we talk about,
sorry?
I was just to say, sorry to interrupt you, but I was just to say out of home, which is a media type that I remember fondly saying it's been the only media type that has shown steady growth over the past decade, year on year on year, I have to imagine is going to be disproportionately affected as we have lots of people that are staying at home. So that's one that's an obvious one.
Absolutely. So we're all living that avoiding out of home experience. And if you look at cinema, you can look at, I think a lot of studios kicked a lot of their new releases to the fall or to next spring, but it's looking increasingly like that's not going to be nearly enough time. So a market like China that has 250 coronavirus cases a day with four times the population has still said no new releases until October or November. So I think as that new cinema reality settles in, you start to see changes in the marketplace, like the AMC Universal deal from last week. I think if we look at radio, that for a long time we had radio anchored by the American commute. So that time in the automobile listening to the radio. And now that so many more people are going to be working at home, potentially permanently, that's a really big chink in the armor for total radio consumption. And consumers are going to choose video over audio more frequently inside their homes. And even on TV, just the production hurdles from not being able to have a big single unified location. So we expect more news and more sports on primetime TV. And what content there is, we expect it to be animation or unscripted or other formats that can be done without a big unified location. So even if we just look at the first order physical effects, there are a huge number of implications. And I think the big trend that unifies them all is it pushes the consumer towards digital formats.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a great segue because the topic that we're supposed to be talking about, which we're going to pivot to right now, is programmatic. And Magna recently released their latest programmatic report, and it really focused on something that we talk about a lot about at the IAB and the IAB Tech Lab, which is the deprecation of third-party identifiers, third-party cookies. Tell us a little bit about what you highlighted in that report, and what's your view on that topic?
Yeah, so our, as you say, our spring report was all about third parties. And our general belief is that when you look industry-wide, there's every incentive for media owners and ad tech companies and brands to say that cookies are antiquated and there are advanced solutions in place and that the deprecation of third-party cookies will have zero impact on their business. I think for some, that's certainly true. But the reality is that for some, cookies still touch the online user experience, and they still touch campaign analytics and attribution models and programmatic targeting. And so as we look at that Google privacy sandbox and what the options are that are going to be developed to potentially replace cookies, it really depends on how robust that is and how widely accepted that is to know how big of an impact this is going to be on the digital ad economy. So when we think about winners and losers, the immediate winners are Google and Facebook and those really big players and big publishers that have a ton of logged in users. And the ones that are more at risk are potentially smaller publishers where their consumers don't log in, as well as some ad tech, multi-touch attribution, sequential messaging, cross-device frequency capping, dynamic creative, all the things that tangentially touch third-party cookies. And then I think the counter-argument can be, well, you know, cookies don't really matter all that much. But I think the broader theme here is that consumers aren't pushing back against cookies. They're pushing back against individual tracking. So You see that in opt-in rates for location data on apps. Today, it's cookies under threat. You know, tomorrow, maybe it's mobile device IDs, or the next day, anything else that identifies individual users and not aggregated buckets of users. So, you know, it's easy to say that deprecation is still more than a year away, but we think it's one of the really critical things to watch for the future direction of the digital ad economy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you might not have seen this, but we made an announcement today with a whole host of other organizations and brands and agencies. I believe UM was one of them. It was called the Partnership for Responsible Addressable Media. And it's really focused on exactly this topic. How do we get business leaders, technical leaders together to talk about what are the use cases, to your point, because it affects lots of different parts of the ecosystem, from targeting to measurement to attribution, to make sure that we're coming up with a set of standards that everyone can operate off of universally. And that is going to be kicking off in earnest following today's announcement. So lots and lots of work to get to that place, but we're encouraged by folks are really leaning in now to actually roll up their sleeves and think about what that future could look like. You know, we talk about kind of predictable privacy, which is what consumers are looking for, as opposed to proprietary privacy, which seems to be what has been happening kind of in individual pockets with individual players in the ecosystem. Let's talk a little bit about another topic, which is tangentially related, which is e-commerce. You know, you see lots and lots of stats, not shockingly, as people are staying at home more. You know, Amazon just came out with their earnings report, absolutely astonishing growth. What are you seeing in the kind of e-commerce space that is of note, and what do you think is going to be coming over the coming months?
Yeah, so we when we look at the whole digital ad economy, we like to focus in on two big drivers, small businesses and e-commerce, and they have a huge amount of overlap. And last year, for example, more than 90% of new search dollars came from e-commerce related campaigns from small businesses. And what we've seen as this crisis has unfolded is it is really magnifying the impact that these small business e-commerce campaigns have. So as generally when a crisis begins, you see CFOs take over from CMOs and cut budgets. But because of search and social's precise attribution, you know exactly by how much. If you cut those budgets, you're going to be cutting your revenues. And so it's a lot harder sometimes to cut those budgets. And that's, again, what we've seen with a lot of e-commerce company ad spend holding up. And as we've really seen a supercharged e-commerce environment where you have captive consumers who are stuck at home with disposable income and no access to physical stores, compounded by auction prices on Google and Facebook and other big platforms that have dropped, resulting in this great opportunity for small businesses who haven't advertised before. Mm. So Facebook usually adds about 1 million advertisers per year, and they've added 1 million new advertisers in just the past few months alone. So as we look forward, we say, okay, all of the new money is coming from these e-commerce related campaigns from small businesses. Product listing ads are growing 5 times faster than text search ads. As you said, Amazon was growing by 40% product listing ads. Google search was shrinking last quarter. And so as we look at that being the big pool of new money coming into the ecosystem, social networks don't want to leave it all to Google and Amazon. They want to say, okay, let's roll out our social commerce platforms to try to take advantage of those big trends. And I think that's what we're seeing now.
Yes, fascinating. And I think that we're just going to have to watch this space, because I think there's going to be tremendous innovation that we're going to see over the coming months for sure. Let's just turn our attention just for a second back to a topic that you know is near and dear to my heart and yours too, which is kind of the streaming space. One of the stats that is routinely cited over and over again in the industry, and I remember the kind of bar chart that you created, and we kind of presented that all over the place, which is kind of the usage versus the ad revenue in the kind of OTT and connected TV space. And there was a huge delta between where consumers are and where the marketplace is putting their dollars. I guess the question to you would be, do you think we're making some progress there? I guess the answer is yes, but why is it taking so long? I mean, what are the challenges that we face that you think we need to overcome?
I mean, I think, again, we keep tracking that stat. And as you know, it sort of...
What's the latest, by the way?
It became wider and wider over time. So the latest is connected TV is 12% of consumer time with media, and connected TV ad spend is 2% of the total bucket. So again, I think what you see is that when it's 3% of media time or 5% of media time, it's possible to ignore. But now that it's 10 or 12%, it's reached that critical mass. And what we usually expect is that there will be a rubber band relationship between those two things where the consumers move and eventually the ad spend gets pulled along. And that's what we're seeing now. OTT spend last year, or what 2 years ago, was $2 billion. Next year, it'll be $5 billion. So we've finally seen that exponential increase. I think what might have been holding it back for a while was, for a long time, the budgets were in the same bucket as TV. Also, there was a lot of inertia and anchoring. So brands were growing spend really fast, but from a very small base. So it didn't really reach that critical mass that we're finally seeing now.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. I liken it to kind of the mobile world. You know, the year of mobile. It was continuously consumer usage outpaced advertising drastically until it wasn't. Until it kind of was a hockey stick growth, and now mobile is the de facto kind of
the year of CTV.
We're seeing history repeat itself. So it's just a question of when does that. I like the rubber band analogy because that's appropriate. It's getting pulled along until it kind of reaches its maximum tension point, and then it'll be grow astronomically, which is nice to see. I think that'll be soon, from all intents and purposes. I think that's going to be happening soon. You know, one of the other areas which is kind of related to that, which we talk to agencies and brands and all over the ecosystem about kind of what their belief is. Is the pandemic going to, bring advertisers back to kind of the comfort of what they're familiar with? Or is it going to spur them to try new things? What's your take on that? Is the pandemic going to spur innovation, or is it going to drive us back to kind of the tried and true?
I think I'm definitely in the innovation camp. I think it's very hard to have a big cycle of disruption and not see innovation forced. Whether or not advertisers want to, they'll be forced to, just because this is going to be such a big inflection point in how consumers interact with media. I think in general too, when there's so much change and so much disruption, that's when we see innovation all across the economy. So if you just look at past recessions, the 70s recession, Microsoft was founded. In the early 80s, you had Adobe. After the dot-com bust, there was the first iPod. You know, last recession, we saw the founding of WhatsApp and Venmo and Groupon and Instagram and Airbnb and Pinterest and Uber, a whole host of household company names. I think when we look back on this period 5 years from now, we will say, well, this was the period when a whole new host of tech companies came into existence, and that's going to provide new and different venues for advertising.
Amen. I hope so. And to that end, have you met with any, like, what's the most innovative or new company that has come across your radar as of late? Anyone?
So, you know, when we try to elevate the ones that'll have the biggest impact on ad spend. So what we've actually been focused on is not so much the new companies, but those new social commerce tech platforms that are growing within the big social networks. So a lot of our digital reports this fall are going to really zero in on social commerce and how that's going to be the new battleground for digital ad spend. Of the X billion dollars coming into the ecosystem, we think that that's going to kick off a real fight where we're no longer talking about just Google and Amazon. We're going to be talking about every social media network taking that e-commerce spend. And you don't need to look any further than Google dropping their commission for Google Checkout to say how quickly the fight for those dollars can escalate and how drastically that can change and accelerate consumer engagement with e-commerce.
Got it. So it's acceleration of technology within some of the existing players as opposed to kind of new upstarts.
Yeah, there will definitely be, and we have our media lab looking at very small new startups. Yeah, absolutely. But we like to zero in on the ones that will shift the dollars the most.
Got it. Okay, I've got two last questions for you. One, which is, I think this has been really good and pragmatic and kind of grounded in reality, which sometimes reality is not as optimistic as we'd like it to be. Give us some optimism. What are you, heading into 2021, what are you most optimistic about?
For a long time, we've looked at, because as you said, we look at all these global markets, we've looked at where are there innovations that are not here in the US. And a lot of times we point to the digital ad market in China and say, well, the sort of interconnectivity of e-commerce with mobile payment and banking and social media there has created this whole host of conveniences and tech platforms and apps that don't exist in the US. And for a long time, the inertia of the ad economy not really changing much from year to year, I think locked us into a trajectory that wasn't catching up. Whereas now I think this disruption, as scary and terrible and unpredictable as it has been, will potentially be the kick to get that e-commerce adoption to where it might be in some other markets. In China, it's twice what it is in the US. And I think as we make our way there, and as we hopefully put the pandemic in the rearview mirror, there will be far more conveniences and platforms and tech interactions that we never even really considered in the US coming to us from foreign markets.
Got it. I like that. That's a good bit of optimism that we can all kind of latch on to.
So I'm going to latch on to anything we can right now. So
absolutely. All right. So we're going to end up with our speed round, which some people excel at and others don't. I have my my bets on you. I think you're gonna crush it. So it's going to be kind of word
many times. So
yeah, word association. So I'm just going to rattle off a couple of words, and you're going to tell me the first thing that comes to mind. All right. First one is 5G.
5G, distant future.
Okay. You could do it speedier than that. I think that was good. Right. We're just getting warmer. Yeah. All right. Next one. Artificial intelligence.
Overhyped.
Oof. ACR.
Privacy risk.
Upfronts.
Uncertain. Flexibility.
Attribution.
Last click.
Data.
Lifeblood.
Addressability.
Storytelling.
Now we're getting good. Podcasts.
Underutilized.
Zoom meetings.
Here to stay, sadly.
Frequency capping.
Anti-annoyance.
Netflix.
Playing defense.
Reach.
Elusive.
CES.
Virtual. Forever virtual.
Forever virtual. How could you imagine a 100,000 plus virtual trade show? I think that's going to be really amazing to see what happens there. So that is, you did great. That was awesome. I had no doubt about it. You crushed it. And it's great to see you. It's great to hear all the things that you're up to at Magna. Keep on kind of with the predicting the global purview. I think you're absolutely right. I think some of the things that we're seeing play themselves out in other parts of the world are going to give us an indication of what we have to come in the U.S. And hopefully this will not last for much longer. But you seem awesome. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. We have podcasts. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. IAB has IAB There is a podcast. You can listen to our whole archive wherever you get podcasts. And it's not just IAB There on Tuesdays. Our IAB Policy podcast happens, and it features experts discussing the legal and regulatory developments changing the industry. And then on Wednesday, IAB leaders discuss what's urgent in digital advertising on IAB Real. So to tune into those podcasts, go to iab.com/podcasts to get everything that you need. On tomorrow's IAB There, we look forward to welcoming IAB Tech Labs President Dennis Buckheim and Senior Director of Product Management Alex Cohn. On Thursday's show, I am incredibly excited to once again come back and be joined by eBay's Global Chief Marketing Officer, Susie Dearin. IAB There is a production of the Interactive Advertising Bureau. Our show today was produced by Connor Healy, Joe Aunts, John Ward, and Carrie Villanueva. I'm David Cohen, and thank you for watching. Come back tomorrow, because if it's 2 p.m. Eastern on a weekday, you know it's time. You IAB There. Thanks a lot.